The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, not too bad, thank you. I was hoping that we would start talking a little bit about the elections, to be honest, because it's not that long anymore, 17th of September. But there's not a great deal to talk about.
Oh, I'm so relieved. And, yeah.
Well, it is a little strange when you kind of, you know, less than 3 weeks away, or something like 3 weeks away from the election, and there just seems to be very little happening except for a public shaving of a moustache that's been there for 50 years. This was Amir Peretz, who went on national TV and shaved off his moustache that he had for 50 years to everybody's horror and indignation and surprise, because that's what apparently captures the headlines. The only other thing that's really worth talking about is the fact that Prime Minister Netanyahu invited Kahol Lavan leader Benny Gantz to a security briefing. And everybody's reading things into this security briefing that, by the way, wasn't attended by Netanyahu. So that was just Benny Gantz with the security personnel to update him as to what's been going on with all the various issues that Israel is confronting at the moment on the security front. Netanyahu was saying that apparently this is because there is no official opposition. There's no leader of the official opposition who would otherwise have been briefed under the circumstances. And given that Kahol Lavan is the second largest party currently in the Knesset, Benny Gantz was the person who was invited. But people are thinking that this might be an indication of what may be happening after the election. And this is somehow an attempt to reach out with a bit of an olive branch towards Benny Gantz. Who knows? That's what we can say right now about the election, other than the various opinion polls, which are more or less saying more of the same, really.
Yeah, it's I reported on the moustache story, but that's about as exciting as it gets. Or maybe, is there talk in Israel? You're really not very far away from it there, and one would think there'd be quite a lot of hype around as Israel heads to the election in really just a few weeks. Is there this build up again?
Not really is the answer. I think people are a little bit wary of this. People are a little bit cynical about what may happen after the election, in that we may still be in the same position as we are today. And the question is then what happens? And that's the reason why people are trying to read things into Prime Minister Netanyahu reaching out to Gantz, thinking that this may be the thing that changes the entire political landscape, because if there is something of a coming together and there is a realization that without those two parties getting together in order to form a government, there will be no government, there is a hope perhaps that, you know, that realization has dawned upon the leaders of the largest party, the largest parties, and that they will somehow do something to avoid being back where we are today in a month's time.
Yeah, fascinating. All right, so let's just talk about the G7, because that's taking place at the moment, and there was a surprise visit by one of the Iranian delegates, and now we're hearing about a possible meeting between Iranian President Rouhani and U.S. President Donald Trump, that may take place in the next few weeks. How does this affect Israel? Is there nervousness, or do you think that this is discussed with Israel prior to anything like this happening?
Well, there's no doubt that this will certainly be discussed with Israel. And in fact, Mike Pence, U.S. Vice President Mike Pence, has already gone on Twitter saying that he had a great conversation, in inverted commas, with Prime Minister Netanyahu, and that the United States fully supports Israel's rights to defend itself from imminent threats. And the conversation that Mike Pence is referring to is a conversation that was held in order for the U.S. administration to reassure Israel that in the context of any possible talks with Iran, the U.S. will always have Israel's back and will always support the Israeli position. So that's the U.S. administration trying to reach out to the Israeli government to reassure the Israeli government, which gives us even a stronger reason to believe that this potential meeting is on the cards. And this is certainly President Trump style. He likes to break down the relationship that he might have with a particular country and potentially, you know, use every weapon possible Absolutely. To weaken that country's position before then reaching out and trying to repair the relationship and try to achieve things. We've seen him do that with the North Koreans, and we've seen him do it with others as well. Certainly we're seeing something similar with Turkey, and we've seen this the strategy with Iran. And so President Trump would certainly regard it as something of a victory, something of an achievement, if he was able to meet with President Rouhani of Iran, bearing in mind, of course, that Rouhani is not the final word on anything that might be discussed, and that that really needs to go to the Ayatollah, the supreme leader of Iran. But nevertheless, any meeting between Rouhani and Trump would be regarded as almost inconceivable a month or two ago. And yet now we're talking about something that's quite real. And certainly from an Israeli perspective, there is a certain threat that exists, because if Rouhani somehow manages to convince the U.S. administration that, you know, they have no intention to harm Israel and, you know, to try and somehow make statements that the U.S. administration may be wishing to hear in terms of the various issues that are going on directly between the U.S. and Iran, Israel may well become a casualty of that discussion. And that's, I think, where the real concern lies, because nobody truly believes that Iran is going to give up on its desire and its intention to somehow build a nuclear weapon. And so it's going to be interesting to see how Trump handles that particular issue, because at least up until now, we've been convinced that Trump is determined to prevent Iran from building a nuclear weapon. He's very aware of the situation. He seems to be very sensitive to the Israeli position on that very, very critical issue. But it's not clear how he would respond when a meeting might take place between himself and Rouhani, and what Rouhani might well have to say to Trump in order to convince him that, you know, the Iranians have good intentions. Trump, of course, understands that the Iranian economy is on its knees. He's made various references to that in the talk that's been going on over the past few days from Biarritz regarding a possible meeting with Iran. He also has spoken about how he might resolve that economic weakness by offering letters of credit to Iran, by getting various other countries to provide money against oil securities, of course, which Iran has plenty of. So this is going to be a very, very interesting few weeks, particularly as we go into the election, to see exactly what Trump's position on Iran is going to be.
Yeah, and Gimple says Bibi admitting to hitting Iranian targets in Syria and showing how Israel's intelligence followed the Hezbollah drone terrorists is electioneering in my mind.
There is no doubt that whatever is being said and done right now will be regarded as part of an election campaign. Whether it is a part of the election campaign or not is very, very difficult for us to truly understand. We cannot deny the fact that a real threat exists from Iran towards Israel. That is plain for everybody to see. It may well be that the Prime Minister is making more of it right now than he would otherwise have done if we were not in an election campaign. But having said that, you know, it's very, very difficult for us as the mere man in the street to truly differentiate between what is a real threat and what is part of electioneering. So I very much hear Gimple the Fool's comment about this being part of an election campaign, because it certainly can look like that. But I think it's difficult really to separate the two.
Yeah. And the Lebanese president has now accused Israel of sending the drones to Beirut. He said that this is a declaration of war. They're very dramatic in the Middle East, I find.
And the response has been very dramatic, because Prime Minister Netanyahu is coming out saying that any response that Hezbollah might send towards Israel will be laid at the feet, in terms of laying the blame, will be laid the blame will be laid upon the Lebanese government.
Incredible.
And this is an interesting development because we've seen the Israeli government use this tactic with Gaza, where even where renegade groups might be sending missiles or sending people across the border, the Israeli government is always saying, we will hold the Hamas administration responsible, and indeed they have done so. Now the same tactic is being used in Lebanon. Admittedly, Lebanon's President Michel Aoun did come out really attacking Israel and accusing Israel of sending those drones that were found in Beirut. There has been more information about those drones. It is claimed that both of the drones were armed, that there were explosives on board, that they were designed to attack rather than to collect intelligence and information. So the Lebanese have been very dramatic in responding to this drone incident, and it's still not 100% clear, at least, you know, in the minds of most Israelis, as to whether those drones were indeed Israeli drones or not, because on the one hand, we're receiving these conflicting reports that at least parts of the drone were Iranian manufactured rather than Israeli. On the other hand, we're now being told that the explosives that were found to be on board the one drone are certainly of Israeli origination. And of course, the fact that there were explosives on board does give an indication of either the fact that they were sent to carry out an attack, or alternatively, they were so sensitive that there would have been a self-destruct button, that the explosive would actually have destroyed the drone, which did actually happen in the case of one of the drones, the second one not so much, and hence the Hezbollah and the Lebanese officials now have the opportunity to interrogate this drone and to find out a little bit more about it. But Michel Aoun has been very determined in saying that he's holding Israel responsible for this, that this is tantamount to a declaration of war. And in fact, the Israeli government have been sending information out saying that Israel does actually expect a response from Hezbollah. And the response that it is expected is a potentially an attack towards the Galilee area of Israel. No special instructions have been issued to residents of that area as yet. And it's interesting to understand why that is, even though the information has been leaked out saying that Israel does actually expect this response from Hezbollah. So once again, it's going to be interesting to see what happens over the coming days. It is very unlikely that Hezbollah will just simply stand back and watch after all the threats, after all the speeches that have been made, not only by the Lebanese president, but indeed by the Hezbollah leader, Hassan Nasrallah. So there is certainly a lot of tension going on along that northern border, both with Syria and with Lebanon right now.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's but very frightening at the same time. We've only got 2 minutes, but I do want to ask you about Israel's assistance to Brazil in fighting the fires in the Amazon. What assistance has Israel offered to provide, Anthony?
Well, we know that Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu has a very close relationship with Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro. In fact, commenting when they met recently that Jair Bolsonaro has the same name as Prime Minister Netanyahu's son Jair, who is also famous in his own right for various things we won't talk about right now. But there have been communications between the Brazilian and Israeli governments about Israeli help that can be offered, even though Israel is obviously on high alert for its own fires, both those coming from Gaza in terms of incendiary devices that have really decreased dramatically in recent weeks, but the threat still does exist. And of course, fires from the very, very hot weather that Israel is experiencing. But Israel has offered to send some supplies to Brazil. Flame retardant chemicals have been offered. And there was also a mention of the fact that Israel would send a special plane to help in the firefighting operation. It's not clear exactly when this will be sent to Brazil, but it's noticeable that Israel hasn't offered manpower. Apparently, the Brazilians have finally activated, deployed 44,000 soldiers to help fight these fires that are scattered across the Amazon. But, you know, it's not the first time that Israel is helping Brazil. Earlier this year, there was that issue where the dam dispersed, and there was a huge disaster that took place in Brazil, and Israel sent people, a team of people, to help in that particular disaster that Brazil experienced. So Israel and Brazil seem to be developing good relations around some of these unfortunate events that are happening in Brazil and that Israel has been willing to assist with. And of course, you know, good relations between Israel and Brazil are very welcome. We hope that that will continue. And of course, that these fires in the Amazon will ultimately be brought under control and will be extinguished as soon as possible.
Absolutely. Anthony Reich, it is 8 o'clock. This is unfortunately where we need to leave it. We will chat to you tomorrow, same time, same place. I'm Howard Feldman. This is Your Morning Mayhem on 101.9 High FM. That was the Israel Report with Anthony Reich.